Hey, America.
Start listening now.
Oh,
God.
Eric, it's too hot.
Yeah.
Eric, I'm sorry. Go get the episode.
It's
over there on the Jessica. It's over there on the table. Just go get it.
Oh, God, the table's melted.
And welcome to another hot, sticky episode of 12 Points from America, a Eurovision Song Contest podcast from America. I'm Eric.
I'm Derek.
I'm Samantha.
And I'm Danny!
Danny's thrilled with everything that's happening.
That's right. America, the country continues to be that way. And that's all.
It's becoming less and less fun to come up with America descriptors.
Lord knows. Yeah.
But that's okay. We'll find some more. We'll find ways to be funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
Humor podcast, right?
Ooh. Yeah. We're trying.
So.
Yeah.
Sam.
Huh?
Let's talk about how we have social media in which people can interact with us in
really?
Totally fun and non-abusive ways.
Yay! Yep.
All right.
It's a total love fest out on the internet where nothing ever goes wrong. And you can find us on all of those standard social media outlets. Our handle on basically everything is 12pointsUSA, or you can just email us directly at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. You can find our merchandise on our Redbubble page or support us with a one-off donation on our Ko-fi account. That's Ko-fi, or with a sustained monthly donation over on our Patreon. Whether you support us financially or not, we love and appreciate you either way, but Patreon supporters do get exclusive content and early access to episodes. Right, it's summertime. We know what this is. It's the quiet season. At this point, it's a lot of sort of background whisperings. You know, delegations saying, "Oh yeah, we're talking about wanting to do this or that." It's early yet. We don't have anything finite. But what we do know is that we should have our official host city announcement by August 8th. As of right now, bids have been submitted in Vienna, Innsbruck, and sort of a twin bid from Vels and Linz. Ooh, the Linzer tart. Just Linzer tarts all day long. I'm going to be bathing in raspberry jam.
When was the last time a twin city host happened?
I can't think of one.
I mean,
like St. Paul?
Bern and... Yeah.
Davenport?
Bern tried it last year with BL, I think, but it didn't really go anywhere.
Sure.
Yeah.
But we've never had a twin host, right?
No,
for real for the show. Yeah.
No, I mean the closest
even unofficially. I know none of them have been officially listed as a twin city, but functionally, maybe there was.
What about like Mill Street? Was there like a backup town?
I think a lot of stuff happened in. I want to say Killarney. Like a lot of stuff flowed into Killarney and Cork from there.
Okay,
I guess you could say Junior Eurovision back in this would have been 2014, because the whole event was being held in like a shipyard in Marsa, but nobody really knew where Marsa was. So they just said the entire island of Malta was hosting it instead of, you know, Valletta. It was a dockyard. So it was sort of
technically
Marsa, but it was really everywhere.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Has Wells and Linz definitely pronounced at least one of those wrong. Have they explained how this would work? Like what is the actual strategy here?
How close actually are those two cities?
I think they're relatively pretty close. I think the venue would be at one. I think the venue would be in Vels, but the Linz is a larger city.
So a lot of the nightlife and infrastructure and like housing would be there.
That's my understanding. I'm pretty sure that they're pretty close to each other.
I wouldn't hate that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Google says
you know, it would
about
be like if Jersey
drive.
City was hosting Eurovision.
Ew.
And Elizabethtown was where everyone lived.
I mean, one, it's Elizabeth, not Elizabethtown. Get it right.
Oh, I see.
And two, if Jersey City were the satellite city for a New York competition, that would be super easy. There's a PATH train that goes from one to the other. Trust me, I should know.
Yeah, but does then, Linz have a PATH train?
But you're in. But then you're in New Jersey.
Watch
yeah,
it.
That's unfortunate.
Watch it.
Right.
Hey,
I'm watching.
Northern Jersey.
I'm watching.
Nobody says
it.
That's good.
Ouch, guys.
Sam, I've been wanting to ask: Are people from New Jersey like territorial against other people from New Jersey? Like, do you hate the shore people?
Or... Well, the shore people that people hate aren't actually from New Jersey. They're what we call Bennies.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Where are they? Are they from space? Where are they from?
I mean, it's Brooklyn in New York. And New York. So Benny,
okay.
Yeah, it's.
But like North,
North Jersey and South Jersey are. There's definitely a cultural difference.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that sort of just because like North Jersey is a suburb of New York? Or
a lot of it does kind of come from that. Like, yeah, North Jersey, like the area where I grew up, really does take a lot more from the New York area, and South Jersey takes a lot more from Philly.
Huh. Oh boy.
Yeah, so North Jersey is a bit more dense, a bit more developed. South Jersey is a little bit more rural, you know. And then
a little
there's
bit more
sort of
violent.
They throw ice at each other. They throw batteries at Santa or whatever that was. Mm-hmm.
A bit grittier, as it were.
Hey. Mm-hmm. And then I've got family in that sort of central belt that kind of goes from like Toms River over to Princeton, and that's kind of no man's land, but it's quite
so
nice.
Everyone hates them or everyone likes them?
I think. I've never heard anybody say a bad word about the Princeton area.
Hmm.
It is quite nice.
Well, that's because you aren't a Yale man.
Please, I'm a Rutgers man.
Yeah. Anyway, you have nothing to talk about, so this is New Jersey time.
Yeah.
Well, I was gonna say, I saw it reported on ESC Extra that like the EBU is actually inclined to go ahead with this much called for like voting review.
I mean, they're
gonna look at it.
So yeah, I mean, this is the time of year when the reference group, you know, they meet up, they hear complaints or criticisms or suggestions from member broadcasters. Like, this is the quiet season. This is what they should be doing with their time. You know, they're doing their SWOT analysis and all of that. And so I'm sure that there are discussions being made, whether that's everything from voting reform to, hey, what's going to, you know, what city is going to host. This is what they do. This is just part of the cycle. So I would be more surprised if they said nothing is happening. You know, things are happening.
Yeah.
including exactly. hopefully a discussion on the redesign of the trophy, because it's just come out that JJ has broken his trophy, much like Nemo. Nemo the year before. You would think that hopefully in Austria, the land of beautiful crystal design, that maybe they will give us a lovely new, maybe a little bit hardier trophy design.
Just put a big chunk of rebar through the weak part.
Ooh.
Shove it
use
right
the
in
stones
there.
They use for curling at the Olympics.
Yeah.
Ooh.
What if it was just exactly the same as the Vince Lombardi trophy? except it just says Eurovision on it.
Yeah, it just says for singing.
Yeah. They could just go to a thrift shop and pick up a third place karate trophy.
Yeah.
Yes.
You kicked the competition. Hi-ya.
Hey. Right.
We've got all the solutions. All the solutions. I mean, it's did it break in the same spot? There seems to be a weak point kind of
by the neck.
Yeah.
Just like in people, yes.
Yeah.
The neck is the weak spot.
Nah.
Go for the neck.
Yes, it seemed to be just about that same spot that, you know, where the body of the microphone just below that.
Well, that seems like a thing you can fix. Although
just get some crazy glue.
Think, yeah. Like in terms of from a design perspective, it seems like that's a thing you can kind of address. I don't know. We'll see. I really like the trophy. It just seems like it shouldn't break as much as it does.
I agree. It's a very pretty trophy. It's become very emblematic, but it's also now becoming tradition to break it. Like it's up there with, you know, what other wonderful traditions do we have? Of Netta saying that the wrong city is going to host the next year. So, you know, things
it's always
like that.
Fun.
Yeah.
Dumping Gatorade on the second place contestant.
Uh-huh. You know, it's good though. It's really just thinking about this some more, it's really good that the only people that have broken it, as far as we know, are people who have won it. Like, can you imagine if it was Like, sometimes they put it, they bring it in the delegation bubble so people can take pictures with it, or the press room or whatever. Like, what if I broke it?
Well, I guess there goes your accreditation for next year.
That would be much worse.
It would be hilarious.
The people who are breaking it, like, there's no bad publicity, is all I'm saying. If you're listening, I'm not going to break it. I'm just saying, what if I did? I'm just saying, like, it's much better that the winners have broken it. I hope they do the exact same intro for next year's final, like shot for shot from this year, except at the end, it's Nemo and JJ both being told don't touch it.
I could see them doing that, or just them getting reprimanded by Martin Osterdahl.
They got to do some sort of callback. Like,
by the way, I don't know if we've touched on this, but like, Martin Osterdahl prominently missing from this year's Eurovision, just sort of taking a step back, doesn't want to be known as Mr. Good to Go. Is that the whole idea?
I think it just kind of goes with the continuation of they don't want to have audible booing. And
so Martin Osterdahl shows up on the feed and everyone in the stadium goes, boo!
I hate to say it, but that's literally what happened. I mean, we have friends who were on the ground at Junior Eurovision in Spain last year. And they said that even the little kids in the audience, when they saw Martin Osterdahl, they started booing him as if he were some sort of a panto villain. And when our friends asked, hey, why are you doing that? The kids were like, it's just what you do, right? That's just part of the tradition, right?
We just wrapped up the NBA finals. Hang on, bear with me. Whenever they present one of these trophies, whether it's that or the Super Bowl or whatever, like, the commissioner always gets booed because it's your job to be disliked. That's one way of avoiding it, I guess. I don't think they did themselves any favors in Malmö when everything had hit the fan. Everyone was in a terrible mood. Osterdahl was under even more scrutiny than usual. And then they did that song, the Linda Woodruff tribute.
Poor timing.
Which I'm sure at some point seemed like a very fun idea. And I kind of give them props for sticking with it, because holy crap, that was a bad idea. But they rolled with it. And you know what? Cool. But that really only made it worse. Like, everyone was already furious with him, and you're making a song about how great he is. And using, like, one of the greatest Eurovision characters in history to do it.
Like, we love you, Linda Woodruff.
Do we, though?
I don't care. I love Linda
Woodruff.
No,
I'm just saying, did we ruin multiple legacies by doing that song? I don't know.
No, it's fine.
No. No, because she will always be Mrs. Azerbaijan to me. Azerbaijan. Like, all right. We do have a smattering of news. Like I said, it's a really, really quiet time for Eurovision season, but Junior Eurovision is really only about 7 months away, give or take. December 13th, coming up over in Tbilisi, Georgia. The venue has been officially announced. It's the small hall of the Olympic Palace in Tbilisi, which we're not exactly sure, because there are two places that kind of translate as the small hall, one of which seats about 3,700, and then the other one only seats about 800. So we'll see how small this small hall is actually going to be.
How small is small hall?
How small is small hall?
How small is the hall in small hall? Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Who but the bomb, the bomb, the bomb, the bomb?
Yeah, and everyone who loses goes to small holla.
Oh.
Ooh.
That's stupid.
Yep. When has that ever stopped us before? When has that ever stopped us before? Anyway, back at Junior Eurovision. We have 14 countries that are currently confirmed at this point. We know that we've lost Estonia and Germany from last year, but we get Croatia and Montenegro back, who haven't been at Junior Eurovision since 2014 and 2015, respectively. So welcome back to both of them. And of course, we do have North Macedonia competing at Junior Eurovision, even though they have not been at the big contest in a couple of years.
I love that about them.
Yeah. So far, we've got four acts that have been named. Kroni Pulev, it will be singing for Albania with the song Fruta Perime, which means fruits and vegetables.
God.
It's adorable.
I love Junior. That's all. That's it. That's the tweet.
Yep. The winner of The Voice Kids in Croatia, Marino Vrgoč, is going to be representing Croatia. Nela Manceska will be singing for North Macedonia. And Mariana Kvos, it's K, it's a crossed L, so I think it's Kvos.
That's a T, Sam.
It's not. It's crossed so
crossed L,
not.
That's a T.
No.
Katos.
It's Mariana. I think it's Kvos. My Polish is crap. But anyway, she's singing for Poland. This was an internal selection. So no chance of not success this year, just a straight internal selection. She was the runner-up on the Voice Kids this year. So far, the Albanian song is the only song that we've got, but we're getting names bit by bit. Derek, while we were, you know, kind of twiddling our thumbs and going about our business, you took part in a little event that our friends over at EuroWhat put on. Is that right? Do you want to tell us a little bit about what was going on with that and when we can expect to hear that?
Yeah, first of all, they're not our friends anymore. Just a heads up.
Oh, dear. Second.
Yeah, that sounds about right for a crossover between us.
Okay, just make up a ceasefire.
It got ugly. So we had a conversation about kind of the role of fan press in the contest. You know, what does it mean? What does it contribute? Kind of a meta conversation on what our role is and how we interconnect, if at all. There was an interesting discussion on how it seems like most fan organizations are very isolated. There isn't a lot of crossover. There isn't a lot of collaboration. People seem to kind of mind their own business. And we didn't really understand why, if it's like a competitive thing or just a personal thing. We also got into a discussion about like, what do we bring to our respective shows, you know, like what's our, like what insights or viewpoints do we have versus other groups? That was kind of interesting. And lastly, I would say, how does fan press compare to more traditional media, and why is one group sort of in higher esteem than the other? So we kind of got into all those things. It was a fun discussion. A show will be released on July 1st. So look out for that.
Ah, so yeah. Just so within a couple days of this episode dropping. Yeah.
Yeah. What is our role?
I've always wondered. We didn't really have an answer.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
All right. So yeah. So if you want to hear more of our opinions and also just checking in on another great podcast from other American Eurovision fans, some of whom are actually great friends of ours, check out the Euro What. Again, as Derek says, that episode will drop on July 1st. Speaking of crossovers with other Eurovision podcasts, I want to take this time to shout out our friends over at ESC Insight, who are setting up a summer-long pod crawl, like a Eurovision pod crawl. Basically, every 2 weeks or so, every two weeks, a new episode will drop at a different podcast among the fan Eurovision sphere. Basically, just delving into a year, a contest, one from each different decade, from the 50s up until more recent contests. Our episode will be dropping in, I want to say it's going to be in August, but basically it's just another way for podcasts to kind of collaborate, to share, to get to know each other over the course of a time of year that, like I said, is normally bereft of news and bereft of activity. So again, ESC Insight kicked that off a couple weeks ago. It's going to be a fun, fun group. Our episode will drop later on this summer. So be on the lookout for that.
And the really exciting thing is we're covering the 2028 contest. So if you've been wondering what's going to happen, we know.
Get your betting ready.
Forward to that. Yeah.
Yep.
I can't talk about it yet.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I've never seen one that big. Anyway, we've got sort of a main topic as well. I don't know which one of us put this on our list of things to talk about at some point.
I think this may have been Derek. All right. So let us know what was your suggestion for this?
Yeah. What were you thinking?
What was the impetus of this?
Yeah.
I know this doesn't happen super often, but every now and again, I'll hear a song at Eurovision and I'll be like, I like this a lot. I'm going to go see what else they've done. And sometimes it's exactly the same style of music that they sent to Eurovision. But every now and again, there's an artist that sends something that is nothing like what they normally do. And highly unlikely they ever do anything like that again. And it's such a strange phenomenon. This is the biggest venue, not to disparage any of these people, likely that they'll ever get. Why would they come to the show with something that is not indicative of their style?
And you have dubbed this the peak Jax effect. Is that correct?
I did not come up with that.
Or somebody has dubbed it the peak Jax effect, at least for the purposes of our show here.
I can only assume that this is Eric.
That might have been me. Yeah. I'm just going to say this. Like an Animal, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sucks. their other material, pretty good.
Huh.
Like, and because it's not as sleazy, it's not as bad. It's better than bad. It's good.
It's good.
Yeah. So like if you weren't into that song, but you generally like rock music, particularly like European, like Italian rock music, don't give up on Peak Jax, for real. Like they have a lot of stuff that is so much better. But it's just so odd to me that somehow they landed on that song that is so unrepresentative of them, both in terms of sound and in overall quality. Like, it feels like they picked like a throwaway song as a thing like, oh yeah, we'll try it for Eurovision or whatever. We don't want to throw away one of our good songs for this. So we'll just do this one about smelling stuff. And oops, we won. Now we have to go and this is what everyone thinks we sound like. Maybe that might not even be true. I don't know. I think this is such a weird phenomenon. When this happens, I think with some acts, it's almost obligatory, and Voyager comes to mind, because I'm pretty sure Promise and the one before
Dreamer,
thank you. Mm-hmm. Like, those are by far the shortest songs they've ever had. They're a prog band. A 3-minute song is like a brief interlude. So sometimes you don't really have a choice. Derek, one act I wanted to talk to you about this with is Hooverphonic.
Huh.
Another group that, their sound has evolved a lot because they've been around for a long time. But mm-hmm. Did you feel like the wrong place or Release Me, the one that ended up not going, were significant departures like this?
I thought they were very much on brand for them.
Okay.
I think The Wrong Place kind of harkened back to their older stuff when they were... Oh, I forgot her name. Heika? The lead singer at the time. Sorry?
Heika?
Heika, yeah.
I think that was her name. G-E-I-K-E?
Yeah. So that was on... That wasn't much of a departure for them, I thought. I'll say, though, everything they've come out since then has been atrocious.
Oh, no.
Pointing.
Oh, man. Another facet of the effect.
Yeah.
I mean, when we talk about this, my brain goes to Tommy Cash. An act that, if you looked at his back catalog, it was very, very different. A lot more, I guess, dirtier, grungier, edgier.
Ustier.
Yeah. For lack of a better term, Eustian, yeah, than what we ended up seeing with Espresso Macchiato. And was that difference in a way his own trolling? And part of it, does it kind of go back onto itself and that trolling ending up being on brand after all? Or is it just him trying something new that he thinks was going to be palatable enough to a Estonian audience to get through ACL?
I think for him it works because there is, unlike everyone else who is sort of competing on the merits of their own song, Tommy Cash really had the luxury of having a persona outside of the contest that was already very well known. Mm-hmm. So for him to even be a competitor in Eurovision, which is ostensibly a quote-unquote family show. They're trying to make it more of a family show. The idea of him competing and then him submitting something that is so innocuous as just singing about my little Italiano espresso macchiato, I think that is on brand for him. And I think that's why a lot of his fans loved it. Loved it so much. Because this is a song that was taking the piss out of Eurovision, the contest itself, I believe, if you are looking at it from that perspective. So to change his usual style for Eurovision, to change his usual style, I think that's kind of what he had to do. What he specifically, uniquely had to do.
I think totally, yeah. I when I was looking at this year, I think the one that really kind of shocked me was Clemen.
Yeah, it was going to be my next one, yeah.
That was your next one, yeah. But just like, I remember watching an interview with him and somebody asked him like, about his, like how, like tell us about your song. And he says, oh, it's such a departure from what I usually do because I'm a comedy writer, typically. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, where in the thought process did it come to where you're like, this is it. This is the biggest stage I'm ever going to be on. I'm going to write a song about my sick wife. And this like really tragic moment in our lives versus these wacky fun songs that he usually does. I kind of wonder, had he stuck with his original style, would he have done better?
Couldn't have done a lot worse.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't last. He did okay, right?
Like, yeah.
12th or 13th or something.
Something like that.
Does that count as 13th. Okay? I don't know.
He's tied for 13th with Belgium.
Ah.
Yeah.
Man,
robbed
strobe
kings.
Lights.
I know,
what
right?
What happened?
Boy, I lost my train of thought there. Oh yeah, Theo Evan from Cyprus.
Mm.
I don't know what his style is. So for him to be
man,
yeah, for him to be working with a big name songwriter and have all this money behind him to say like, okay, do you want to go to Eurovision? You want to do this kind of song, which is a very traditional Eurovision pop song. I'm sure he would jump at the opportunity to do that, even if it's not his usual style. And I think it's kind of interesting to compare something like that to someone like Clemen, who has an established style that people know him for something, and to completely deviate from that versus Tommy Cash, who has an established style and still is within that realm. Even if it's a bit toned down compared to his sleazier stuff.
Well, I suppose in the case of Clemen, yeah, people do know. I mean, the Slovenian audience certainly knew him as comedian showman. A lot of the Eurovision audience, like they're really into, like folks like us, knew him from his comedy work. Anybody who had watched Put In, Put Out or had seen in National Final stuff. But if you're going to launch a different facet of your career, especially when you have a new album coming up, it's a risk, but at the same time, what better place to have a launch of a new chapter and start completely fresh than with a different side of yourself that maybe all these people who didn't really know who you were, this is the first version of him that we see. And sure. So it might be a very calculated risk to say, hey, this is who I am right now. This is a product, or not a product. This is a thing that I'm giving to the world. And this is what I want people to know me as, is the sensitive guy with a heart, rather than just, you know, put in, put out.
Was Slovenia a national selection this year, or
yes.
Was it a proper final? Okay.
It was a national final.
It was a final. Okay.
It was a national final. Yeah.
It was not just selected. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it was not an internal selection. Mm-hmm. No.
And in that scenario, I think he had a pretty strong chance to win no matter what he did. Wouldn't you
think?
That's
true.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very, very well-known name there.
Right. But yeah, once you get to the Eurovision stage, it's different. But that being said, if you're deviating this much, it's hard to say with confidence that, like, you're putting your best foot forward in that case. And honestly, by the time I saw it on stage, I didn't mind how much time do we have left. I got it. It was heartfelt. I don't know why he was upside down for some of it. Like, I'm sure it's a metaphor.
Yeah, it makes sense. Your life is being turned upside down.
Yeah, that it's a choice to not play to your established strengths, That doesn't make it a mistake, but it really has to be a deliberate choice.
This is over the course of a career rather than just Eurovision consciousness. But if you look at Erika Vickman, she started out as a tango queen, and now she's Erika Vickman.
Now mm-hmm. she's just the queen.
Exactly. So, I mean, she has certainly had an evolution and a massive, drastic change in style from the beginnings of her career to what we saw on the Eurovision stage. Obviously, it's slightly different lens, but in terms of the artist having the right to be able to change and to shift, I mean, that's just in the eye of the artist, I think.
Yeah.
I feel like with her, though, we kind of saw that progression when she came out with, like, Cicciolina a few years ago.
True.
That was... This seems like a very logical extension of that.
Mm.
I'm excited to see her final form. I feel like that's going to be that's going to be bad for all of us.
Back to tango.
This is tough for me because a lot of the only artists that I have sort of like picked up and followed extensively after Eurovision have like both sort of like they're just the same. Like they just sent to Eurovision the stuff that they had made up to that point and just sort of like things are slightly different now, but every musical artist slightly grows after a few years. This is so strange to me because like all of those artists that I love sort of sent something that was authentically them. That was like authentically their band or their style. Like this just seems so stupid to abandon that because we have examined on this podcast that like authenticity is an extremely valuable yet rare commodity at Eurovision. Why would you abandon that just to crash and burn?
I have a counterexample for you, actually.
I was going to say, who has won by really changing?
Not one. Certainly not one. But in terms of sometimes it's not the artist's decision.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
And my brain goes to your friend of mine, the Belarusian act from 2012. The guys from Light Sound, the song We Are the Heroes.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a song that they had won a national... Technically, at first blush of the national final, they came second. Then they realized that there was some malfeasance that had gone on. The song that had won
in
got
Belarus.
Pulled. I knew who'd have thought.
Wow. Yeah.
And the boys from Light Sound ended up going. And then the delegation decided to monkey with the song in a way that it wasn't really... The song stayed We Are the Heroes. However, it was rearranged in such a way that they felt it was not authentic to them.
And by we mean Lukashenko exclusively.
Came in with his
was it like that? Was it politicizing or
it wasn't like... politicized. It was no, the lyrics stayed the same. It was the style of the song. They Light Sound tend to be very, you know, straightforward kind of pop rock. Honestly, not too different from a lot of Pete Jacks, frankly. If you like that kind of middle of the road, classic, accessible pop rock. And the delegation decided to make it more electronica and more, reproduce it in a way that really wasn't authentic to the band. And the guys had to kind of grit and bear it. They had really no choice in the matter because, well, one, this was their biggest dream to go to the show and have their song played in, you know, in front of millions of people. And two, this is Belarus. So you don't argue.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, granted, I realize that talking about a Belarusian act is certainly an extreme, but a lot of the times when we say this song isn't emblematic of an artist's back catalog, sometimes it's not necessarily the artist's choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll note, and I don't think this is a made, it's a weird departure, but it's not like necessarily better or worse or anything. Sometime after he did Lie to Me, Mikolas Josef went into Latin pop, which is weird because there's nothing even remotely Latin about that guy. But some
Mambo
of it is
number five.
Some of it is really good.
Okay, I have to say,
really
my
good.
I have to say, my
there's
brain
one called
when you
acapella,
said,
and it's fantastic.
When you said Latin pop, my brain went to Latin language pop.
Ooh, oh,
like
yeah, why don't we
like
have
him
that?
Doing like Gregorian chants with a beat.
Remember when that was a thing?
Yeah. Give me pure moods vision. I also just want to note, I feel like to turn this on its head slightly, I feel like more often than this phenomenon, I get the exact opposite where like there'll be an artist that I whose Eurovision song I really, really like, and then I'll listen to their subsequent single or the rest of their stuff and think, oh God, they picked the right song because the rest of this is rough. And I will go ahead and I will go ahead and give a possibly controversial example, Baby Lasagna. The okay. follow-up stuff to Rim Tim Tagadim is brutal. I'm sorry. I don't know what to the point where I almost don't know what it is about Rim Tim Tagadim that was like, oh yeah, this is perfect. And then like, what else you got? And it's like, ugh. The other act, maybe actually this might be even more controversial, but it brings up a thing I want to read on the podcast.
Great.
Another act I feel this way about is Måneskin.
Oh, you said this before. Yeah.
That like Zita Buoni, probably a top 5-10 Eurovision song for me ever. Basically everything else does not click. And I'm not the only one. Par exemple.
I know you're not the only one, but also they are like the biggest rock band in the world.
Understood. Nevertheless, I'm going to share a small snippet of Pitchfork's review of Rush, their first English album.
Oh, gosh.
Because it's very funny, and I want to. So here it goes. Their music may sound like it's made for introducing the all-new Ford F-150, yet they won the campy poppy Eurovision contest in 2021. The same year, they went mega viral on TikTok with their version of Beggin', a song originally written for by the mid-century pop group The Four Seasons. Måneskin are from Rome, a city famous for 1,000 things before you get to good rock music. Can they conquer the world? Asked the New York Times. And Rush, their first album recorded mainly in English, is absolutely terrible at every conceivable level. Vocally grating, lyrically unimaginative, and musically one-dimensional, it is a rock album that sounds worse the louder you play it. Woof. I don't expect Pitchfork of all places to be really into this sort of thing, to be fair.
That just seems mean.
Yeah.
Well, it's Pitchfork. When they have fun, they have fun. Yeah.
That just seems...
It goes on to ask, don't you wish cologne commercials were longer? Don't you wish Guitar Center could win a Grammy?
Whoa. Okay. All right. Mean.
Leave them alone.
It was such an incredible story. We were so rooting for them. Except for, I think, Derek. But like, and I don't fully agree with the extent to which this article goes, but I kind of understand it. Like, some of these things just end up being such a lightning in a bottle thing that when you try to recreate, and they're not trying to recreate Zita Buoni exactly, but when you look at it outside of the bottle in which the lightning was captured, so to speak, a lot of times I feel like it kind of falls apart.
You can't recreate it. You can't do this. It is like trying to make a movie just to win an Oscar. Like, sometimes that works, but a lot of the time the movie that does end up winning the Oscar just happened to be a really good movie that a bunch of people really passionately wanted to make. Like, I don't know if you really can engineer a song and then just say it's gonna win Eurovision unless you have Loreen. True. But it's just not gonna happen. You need people who are doing something with that special spark of, I'm doing something a little bit different, or I'm just doing something that I really love doing. I don't think that you can really take something and put it into a machine and hope that it's going to happen. I think if you're changing your style completely, just sort of like in an attempt to win Eurovision, at best, I think you're going to come in sixth. I don't think that's going to be a win. I don't think it's possible.
I don't think at best. I think six is very generous if you're at best. It.
I know, yeah. But that's the idea. A lot of songs. What if the Swedish songwriting machine is working its hardest and you're from Norway? That'll get you six.
I was thinking about this, like, in terms of like literary circles, there's this idea called like the second novel problem, where you have like a breakout hit your first time out, and then you kind of see success and you get this pressure to recreate that success, even if it's not the exact same thing. And it kind of breaks people sometimes. And I think one of my favorite examples is Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man. He never really followed up on that. He wrote a couple other books, but... Huh? Yeah.
Harper Lee, too, right?
Yeah, Harper Lee never wrote anything else. She was like, okay, one and done.
Yeah.
You can have the second manuscript out when I'm dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like that happens in music, too. Sometimes you have this brilliant debut album that's like your entire life's work up to that point, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the second album, you get a couple years to work on. Sometimes you evolve in a way. I'll use Radiohead as an example because their first
album I knew the Bends was going to come in here eventually.
Pablo Honey is the first, and it's almost certainly their worst album. But I think there are a lot of other cases where you kind of really start out at the top and peter away because you just didn't have enough more. I'm not saying this is an all-time great exactly, but the artist that comes to, for some reason, that comes to mind is Hootie and the Blowfish.
Okay. Because, Cracker View was an excellent album, yeah.
Colossal album, yeah.
Huge.
It was a colossal hit, yeah.
Yeah, if you... I bet there are a lot of countries in Europe that haven't gotten them yet, but like... But
if you were alive in America in 1996, you heard Hootie and the Blowfish on every radio station.
Yeah. Yep. You had a copy of the CD in every room of your house just in case, and then one for the car, this
one in the garage.
This was a phenomenon. Like, are you Macarena saying that, like, levels of, like, huge and
like the amount of validation that you get from winning Eurovision or doing extremely well at Eurovision is equivalent to the idea of like being a breakout success, like getting a blockbuster hit, like so.
Maybe.
So that the pressure is enough to change you completely.
Just coal to diamond.
I mean, it depends. I mean, they talk about the Grammy for Best New Artist as being the kiss of death.
The curse, yeah.
That, like, you don't want to win that because... And that's just sort of a confirmation bias thing. But there are plenty of examples of somebody who won that. And, like, I think, like, Paula Cole won it. And then you never heard from her again. We still don't know where the Cowboys have gone. But like, there are very big acts that have won it as well. Måneskin was nominated for it.
They were.
I don't believe they won.
They did not.
Oh, who did they lose to? I want to know now. Samara Joy, looks like.
Yeah, I was gonna say the high jazz artist Samara Joy beat Måneskin.
Mm-hmm. Who?
Yeah. See.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
Derek, you were saying.
I was just going to say, I think it in part kind of comes back to that question you asked years ago that I still think about all the time is, well, what do they think Eurovision is? And if you're looking at the artists, what are they bringing to the show? I guess it depends on what do they want to show the world versus what do they want to be? And I think in some cases,
that's a little, that's a little sad.
I know, right?
That, like, if you change that much, you're yearning for validation more than you actually are yearning for making good music. Oh, that's mean. That's sad.
That's showbiz. That's showbiz.
That's basically Salvador Sobral's acceptance speech.
Yeah.
Well, just think of how many artists, like Theo Evan. How many, like, come to the contest with a song that's completely built around them? They have no input in it whatsoever. They just are told, here's what you're going to wear. Here's where you're going to move. Here's where the cameras are. Here's what you're singing. Go.
Here is the shell. Now go fill it.
Yeah, basically. And, if, like, honest to God, if someone came to me and said, hey, do you want to do this? We are going to dictate every second of your life for 2 weeks. But you're going to be on Eurovision. I would be like, hell yeah, let's do it.
2 weeks? It's more like, 4 months, depending on when the national final is, if not earlier.
I think as it gets closer to the contest, it becomes more of your life. Versus if you get some free time, 3 months before the contest starts. But I mean, as you get closer to it, it takes up more and more of your time to the point where you're like waking up at 4 a.m. to do vocal work or something, which I've heard artists do sometimes. I wouldn't necessarily turn that down.
That'd be tempting.
And this is why I podcast and I don't sing. I don't get up at 4 a.m. for anything. Come on. All right, you at home, let us know what you think. What are some examples of acts that you loved on the Eurovision stage and just didn't quite connect with in their other stuff, or the other way around, something, an act that you just didn't connect with on Eurovision, but then you look at their back catalog and you're like, yeah, this is all, this is for me. This is what I want. Let us know.
Send us recommendations.
Yeah, for real. Yeah. I'd love to
hear your review them and then judge you based on your opinions.
You know how to find us, 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com, 12pointsUSA on all the social media outlets. We will be with you in a couple of weeks. Thank you again for joining us. Until next time, everybody, I've been Samantha.
I've been Derek.
I've been Eric.
And I've been Danny.
And America.
Stop listening now.
This was a great, great job of wasting 10 minutes. This, amazing work, everybody.
Hey, you know, really in the absence of news, you work with what you got.
That was phenomenal. Like, that's going to be great.
Yeah.